You're listening to the Source News on 4EB Global Digital,
catching you up on global and current affairs.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Source News, current affairs brought to you by Griffith University Communication and Journalism students. I'm Tiffany Horgan. On today's program, we'll be taking a look at North Queensland's crocodile management, how the Gold Coast's rapid construction of high-rises is causing thousands of locals to lose their homes, and the future of the Tuvalu region as climate change threatens to sink the tiny island. In light of October being Mental Health Awareness Month, we'll also be exploring the disproportionate mental health effects for those with disabilities. But first, here's Maddie and Tani with today's headlines.
Up first with local news. Multiple high schools on the Gold Coast are set to become vaccination hubs this weekend as a part of the state's second Super Pfizer weekend. 19 high schools in Queensland will become vaccination centres, with anyone over the age of 12 being able to walk in and receive either their first or second jab. Pacific Pines State High School will be one of the 19 hubs open from 9 a.m. till 2 p.m. on both Saturday and Sunday. Queensland borders are still shut and Gold Coast locals are unclear on when they will reopen. Gold Coast Chief of Health Officer Dr. Jeanette Young is not willing to reopen the borders until people aged 12 years and up have been given the chance to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet and Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk will be meeting to discuss border arrangements in the near future. Victorians have invented a breakthrough detection tool that can identify early signs of breast cancer cells. The Nano M slide has been trailered at the La Trobe University and can detect even the lowest number of cancerous cells in a biopsy. La Trobe University's lead chemistry and physics professor, Brian Abbey, says this tool has made it easier for scientists to identify dangerous cells and diagnose breast cancer early.
Typically, when you have a biological sample and you put it under the microscope, you just don't see very much. It looks basically transparent unless you add dyes or chemicals to render the sample visible. So what this slide does is actually remove the need to do any chemistry. The sensor makes the sample, any sample that you put on the slide, basically light up with these vivid colours that pop out under the microscope.
That's Brian Abbey speaking with the ABC this morning. To national news, New South Wales has become the first Australian state to reach the 70% vaccination target. Premier Dominic Perrottet confirmed this morning at least 70% of the state's eligible population over 16 are fully vaxxed. Despite reaching the milestone, no additional freedoms will be granted before Freedom Day on Monday, which will see all retail, pubs, gyms and restaurants reopened for fully vaccinated residents. Further changes to the state's roadmap have been made in preparation for reaching 80% double doses, including having up to 20 visitors in a home. Coles is set to ditch its in-store butcher service, with all meat to be pre-packaged from October 10th. The move will see over 1,500 meat departments employees affected, either being redeployed or made redundant. The supermarket giant says the controversial decision comes to meet the changing needs of its consumers and consistently supplying retail-ready meat whenever they want to shop. Woolworths has already made the switch to pre-packaged meats, whilst Aldi has never had an in-store butcher service. Meat counters will continue to operate in small number of Coles stores.
Needle-shy Australians can breathe a sigh of relief with over 100 new vaccines being developed in alternative formats, from nasal sprays to oral pills and patches on the arm. University of Queensland's Associate Professor Paul Griffin says having so many alternative formats could further reduce the risk of transmission.
There are some properties that we'd really like to be able to add to the vaccines we have. And one of those, of course, would be the ability to reduce the prospect of transmission even more. And some really interesting lines of investigation there include, for example, intranasal vaccines. And there's quite a few of those.
Some hopeful experts are predicting the new vaccines will also boost coverage in low-income countries with very low vaccination rates. Others argue lifting global vaccination rates needs to be a higher priority before countries like Australia consider alternative or booster shots. In international news, the World Health Organization has announced the rollout of the world's first malaria vaccine for children in Africa. The historic decision to administer the vaccination, called RTSS, comes after the success of pilot immunization programs conducted in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. Findings show the vaccination significantly reduces symptoms of severe malaria and can prevent around 4 in 10 cases. It is recommended that children in sub-Saharan Africa and other regions with moderate to high transmissions of malaria take 4 doses of the vaccine by the age of 2. The World Health Organization's Department of Immunization, Vaccines and Biologicals says funding will be the next step for the vaccination rollout to reach the children in need. Afghanistan is requesting the United Nations pay $90 million in their unpaid power bills as electricity could get cut off for the country. Electricity bills haven't been paid to Central Asian suppliers since the Taliban took control of Afghanistan in August. The Taliban insist they have a good relationship with those countries who supply power and don't expect them to stop providing electricity. A countrywide blackout could cause a humanitarian disaster for Afghanistan as their winter season is beginning to set in. An earthquake struck Pakistan's southwestern province in the Balochistan capital at 3 a.m. this morning. Senior provincial government official Sahali Anwar Hashmi confirmed 20 people deceased and 200 injured. Further, electrical lines have fallen, blocking roads in the region, and immediate rescue operations have been deployed to evacuate the injured. In a state of emergency, the seismic waves struck 20 kilometres, facing a 5.7 magnitude distribution with expected reports of ongoing tremor. To sport, cricket superstar Ben Stokes is unlikely to be named in England's squad for the Ashes due to ongoing injury complications. The 30-year-old has undergone his second surgery after a severe break on his left index finger playing in the Indian Premier League in April. Despite the surgery's success, Stokes has been on an indefinite break since withdrawing from the home test series against India this year, citing mental health struggles. Cricket Australia has announced Stokes will be featured in New Year's contracts for Men's Central, despite being omitted from the 2020 World Cup. This weekend on the Gold Coast, former Voice contestant Chang Po Ching is set to headline the Churn Park Street Festival this weekend. The festival is set to include an exciting performance from Chang Po Ching, live roaming performers, local food stalls, entertainment for kids and community group stalls. The festival will kick off at 3 p.m. this Saturday and run until 9 p.m. To the weather. Warm conditions all around southeast Queensland today. It's currently 26 degrees here on the Gold Coast and 28 across Brisbane, Mount Gravatt and Logan. Later on this weekend, a little warmer across southeast Queensland with sunshine reaching an average high of 24 degrees.
Australia's mental health crisis continues to accelerate amongst growing unemployed and other pandemic-related stressors. In June 2021, the Australian Bureau of Statistics reported almost 1 in 3 Australians aged between 18 to 34 experience high or very high levels of psychological distress. For those with disabilities, the risk of mental illness is even greater. Tiffany Horgan reports.
October is Mental Health Awareness Month,
a time for Australians to understand the importance of prioritising their well-being and promoting help-seeking behaviours. It's also an opportunity to recognise the impacts of mental illness on those around us, whether we have a lived experience of mental illness or not. Diploma of Mental Health graduate Talia Rose says people with disabilities are at a significantly higher risk of experiencing severe psychological distress than those without.
People with disabilities are about 5 times more likely than a person without a disability to develop a mental health issue.
1 in 5 people in Australia has some form of disability, leaving over 4 million people vulnerable to mental ill health. People with disabilities have also responded strongly to the stress of the pandemic, particularly if they are at higher risk of serious illness from COVID-19. Talia says these pressures have increased the already disproportionate mental health risks for those with disabilities.
Unfortunately, people with disabilities have limited access to certain services. Especially with the pandemic, this has affected that access as well. So they're more likely to develop mental health issues.
Even in non-pandemic circumstances, those with disabilities are more likely to have compromised immunity and an increased risk of morbidity, which has historically impacted their mental health. Some people with disabilities also face challenges routinely and actively participating in everyday life areas such as education. Disability carer and support worker Sarah Green says that pandemic-induced isolation, disrupted routines, and diminished health services have greatly impacted the lives and mental well-being of people with disabilities.
They rely on routine. One of my clients, she has autism, and she, if something is different, she has severe anxiety from it. So I think with the pandemic, you know, instead of getting up and going to school or getting up and going to an after school care program or something like that, now they have to isolate at home or do things differently. And maybe if they don't understand what's going on, that would impact their mental health.
The pandemic has also further restricted the limited access to meaningful employment for those with disabilities. The Department of Social Services found that some employers were unwilling to employ a person with a disability due to misconceptions about the cost of modification and adaptive technology. These circumstances have increased the risk of people with disabilities developing mental health issues due to poor economic security and a diminished sense of identity.
People with disabilities, unfortunately, can be viewed as a whole less than other people in society with their physical disability. I think it's really important just to not view people as a whole as being disabled, but just identifying their single disability and thinking of ways that we can help them just with that.
Disability discrimination accounts for the highest volume of complaints across the board to the Australian Human Rights Commission. Disability carer and support worker Sarah Green says that learning how to effectively communicate with people with disabilities is essential for their well-being in a post-COVID landscape.
Communicate with them that they know that they can talk to you about stuff. Try and understand how they communicate. There's others who don't actually know how to express how they're feeling. So they might be like, I'm feeling sad, but I don't actually know how to tell you that I'm feeling sad. For them, it's harder to express how they feel about their mental health or how they're feeling.
Mental health graduate Talia Rose says simply adapting our language can help to reduce the stigma those with disabilities face on a daily basis.
We can reduce this by the way that we speak about people with disabilities. For example, instead of saying disabled people, we can just say people with a disability.
In response to the mental health risks for those with disabilities during the pandemic, the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with Disability has issued a statement of concern. They urge the federal government to ensure access to and the provision of appropriate mental health care to all persons with disabilities.
Tiffany Horgan reporting there.
Tuvalu, a small island state removed on the global arena, is becoming increasingly prominent in connection to the current issue of climate change. According to Tuvaluans, the island is in grave danger of disappearing from the map as sea levels rise.
Climate change is the greatest threat to our existence, and it is at the forefront of the small island, Tuvalu. Pacific Islanders are reaching an existential crisis where the island will vanish and the remaining residents will be swallowed by the sea. Researchers predict that the global sea levels are currently rising at 3 to 4 millimeters annually. As a result of increasing sea levels, whole communities have been forced to abandon their islands where they have resided for generations. Tuvalu's Red Cross Society's Climate Change and Disaster Management Officer, Leila Avanetelir, is currently involved in the disaster relief for the community. The response team distributes relief supplies and temporarily shelters evacuees to give assistance and minimise their vulnerability while the country is in a state of emergency.
During times of response, we can only support a few. So Valor Red Cross can only support the most vulnerable. And the most vulnerable we can get is up to 15% of the people on each island.
The Pacific Island leaders are not being rhetorical when they claim Tulavu needs international support. With coronavirus being affected globally, a national state of emergency declared border closures, with the exception of necessary vessels.
The cargo ship delayed for a period of a month to the islands, and people start panic buying because people here in Tuvalu heavily rely on the imported goods. These are all issues that we're still facing, and we're still trying to get more support.
By increased stress on the island's food supply, Tulavuans had become more dependent to expand the subsistence agriculture and fisheries sector throughout the country. The salinity and scarcity of fresh water, as well as inadequate soil nutrients, limits the number of crops that can be produced, leaving residents with no choice but to adapt to these conditions they face. Tulavu Community President Tilke Katara raises awareness and hope of preserving his nation and telling their story to prevent sea rise and coastal erosion from destroying his home's habitability.
The rising in temperatures affect our means of survival are being threatened. Our crops are dying because of temperatures are becoming too extreme that plants finding it hard to grow. Our soil becoming more salty because of salt water coming through from underground during king tide and high tide. So all these issues are affecting us as Tuvaluans.
Effects from climate change cause significant weather anomalies, with changing rainfall patterns causing droughts and tropical cyclones. These changes affect marine ecosystems and soil infertility, having a monumental impact on the island's humanity.
We still don't want to leave our country, even if it's underwater. There's a lot of talks in back home in Tuvalu saying we'll find a means to float on top of Tuvalu and still claim this place as Tuvalu, because it is. It's our country. Our forefathers would probably be under there.
Without international efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions or man-made protections, Tulavu will be under permanent threat from a further 15 to 25 centimetres of sea level rise expected by 2050. According to studies, an additional 77 centimetres of sea level rise will cause the island to be fully submerged. With a lack of support, the ocean will rise further, eventually rendering these islands inhabitable. Tulavuans could potentially face becoming climate refugees. This is Moesha Recklander, influencing you to seek the truth.
Thanks, Moesha.
A three-year study into crocodile numbers in Queensland have found the population of saltwater crocodiles has increased by 2.2%. With the population recovering from being hunted to almost extinction, there are now questions surrounding crocodile management. Here's Tani Maxwell with more.
This week marks 2 months since the brutal crocodile attack in far north Queensland, which left two men with serious injuries. Along with a string of other recent attacks, this sparks concerns for the rise of the crocodile population in areas of northern Australia. The question, which seems to have divided many, is whether culling is an appropriate method of managing the crocodile population in Queensland. Senior Research Associate and Zoologist Dr. Adam Britton says the mass culling of crocodiles could lead communities to a false sense of safety.
One of the other problems with shooting crocodiles is it then gives people a false sense of security about how safe it is to go out onto rivers, because they think, well, okay, now most of the crocodiles have been shot, it's safe to swim.
Though a three-year study shows the Queensland crocodile population has increased 2.2% since 2018, Dr. Britton says a crocodile safety program will be most effective at keeping everyone safe.
So it's not a question of numbers, like I said at the beginning, it's a question of whether or not crocodiles are present. And that's why We always say to people, standard common sense safety precautions when you're around water will keep you a lot safer than someone going out and shooting a bunch of crocodiles.
Leading researcher in zoology and environmental protection, Professor Graham Webb, says the decision to cull crocodiles can be appropriate depending on situational factors.
It's a balanced situation. There's not one answer to cull or not cull. You know, management requires culling crocs in certain areas for human safety, and in other areas where people are living, like in bushland, to make sure that people are seriously well educated about it.
Among Australians, we know crocodiles to be valuable for not only their skin to produce products such as handbags, but for great tourism in Northern Australia. Professor Webb supports that crocodiles are a valuable economic asset.
So the approach we've taken is a balanced one, a logical one. It has the support of the public, the support of the politicians. It has economic development on Aboriginal communities. It has economic development in Northern Australia. It has massive injection of funds into research with crocs. You know, we tend to lead the world in knowledge about crocs. And so it's a win-win-win-win situation.
Along with the Northern Territory, the Queensland Government have in place a crocodile management plan. Dr. Britton says Queensland is successful with educating the community about crocodile safety.
But when you actually look at the statistics and you look at the number of people who live in these areas compared to the number of crocodiles, the risk per person is actually getting less compared to what it was, say, 10, 15 years ago. And a lot of that reduction in risk is because the Queensland Government has got a really effective education and awareness program.
The Queensland Government will continue their Problem Crocodile program, which includes relocating crocodiles that threaten community safety.
Tani Maxwell with that story. Gold Coast locals are copping the brunt of a mass interstate escape. Over the past 8 months, 40,000 Victorians have moved to Queensland. Because of this, property development has skyrocketed, which has left Gold Coast locals with no choice but to relocate. Maddie Lloyd has more on the story.
The Gold Coast is one of the fastest growing cities in Australia. This year, 40,000 people moved from Victoria to Queensland, and predictions say that 100,000 Victorians will move to Queensland in the next year. This is creating a large demand for housing and jobs.
Property developers are migrating from Sydney and Melbourne to escape lockdowns, but also to cash in on this prime investment spot. Melbourne-based development group Hirsch & Fagan have been developing high-end boutique residential apartments in Melbourne, but in 2018, they acquired their first Gold Coast site in Palm Beach, and since then have secured two other sites in Kira and Mermaid Beach. In an interview with Matt George, Director of Sales at Hirsch & Fagan, he explained that their $8 million boutique penthouses are more focused on owner-occupiers and creating spaces that people can actually live in as opposed to ticket flick rentals.
We've only got 27 apartments in this building in here. So as big as it looks, it's quite a boutique project. Obviously providing accommodation and providing a product that people want, but also to putting more people in certain areas, which is sort of helping local business and those type of things, particularly when the borders are closed like they are at the moment.
But are boutique apartments something the pre-existing residents of the Gold Coast need or want? Because of the boom in property developments, Gold Coast locals are having to leave their homes. Apartments are being torn down and replaced with luxury boutique apartments that the pre-existing community can't afford. Residents at 100 Musgrave Street, Kira, are furious about the destruction of the two apartment buildings, which Hirsch and Fagan will be replacing with 27 exceptional residences. The residences will start off at around $3 million for half a floor. Bowen Hopper used to pay $350 a week for a one-bedroom at 100 Musgrave Street, but was forced to move due to the uncertainty
of his lease.
Yeah, probably the most stressful part for me was trying to find a place in my price range. Obviously, like a lot of places that we wouldn't normally look at to get a house, me and my girlfriend, is now being developed. So there's no more low-end houses that we can afford, so we kind of have to go for the more expensive options. It's definitely frustrating, you know, to see what the Gold Coast is turning into. Obviously, everybody's moving up from Melbourne and Victoria and all those places, Sydney and that. It's a lot harder for us to find a place, and it's sad to see the Gold Coast turn into what it's turning into.
Bowen Hopper and his partner aren't the only ones struggling to find an apartment or house on the Gold Coast. Hundreds of other Gold Coast locals are being forced out of their homes to make way for apartments they can't afford.
Wow, touching story. I hope Mr. Hopper and his partner find a place soon.
Well, that's a wrap on today's program. Thank you for tuning in to The Source News on 4EB Global Digital. We hope you enjoyed your time here with us today. Find us on Facebook by searching for The Source News and visit our website at thesourcenews.com. Remember to take care of your friends, family, and yourself. This is Mental Health Awareness Month. I'm Moesha Racklander. Stay safe and see you next week.